What I'd like to reflect on in the talk this evening is the series of pictures in the Zen tradition that are called the ox herding pictures. Some of you may be familiar with them. It's sometimes said that philosophy is another word for homesickness. And meditation is sometimes described as a way of coming home, as a way of responding almost to a quality of homesickness within ourselves. Meditation, often for many people, before they ever begin a formal practice or a formal path, for many people, meditation or the draw to meditation is an intuitive response. The path somehow touches some, I would think, almost ancient echo within ourselves, touches our own sense of aspiration and vision, our aspiration to discover the possibility of living a life that is filled with wisdom and compassion. That sometimes formal meditation is a response to our own inner longing to find a way to be within ourselves and within our world that is free from division and alienation and fear. I think formal meditation is for many of us a path to discovering what it means to be truly at home within our minds, to have a mind that we feel is a friend, to be truly at home in our bodies without fearing the changes that all our bodies go through, to learn what it means to have a home within our hearts, to be at peace with the spectrum of emotions that we experience in our life. But I think that the aspiration in meditation practice is not just about what can happen within our inner world, but also acknowledging that undeniable relationship between our inner world and our outer world. And that to be at peace with ourselves is very clearly a way of learning to engage in our world with receptivity and openness and sensitivity and fearlessness. So the home, or the coming home that is spoken of in meditation, is clearly something much deeper than just a geographical address. But it's much more describing a way of being or a dimension of being that is born of wisdom and that is an embodiment of an extraordinary freedom. When we think of the word home and what that can mean for us, I think it has for us the implications of a reliable acceptance and love and understanding that home may be the place where we're able to let go of pretense and self-consciousness and the need to prove ourselves, a place of ease. Home is the place where we can simply be. Many of you, I'm sure, will have experienced in meditation practice that this path is one when we are learning again and again the simple but often very challenging skills of returning home. We're learning to let go of our preoccupations about the past and about the future. Learning what it means to be present. Often that means for us learning to disentangle ourselves from the whole array of images and beliefs and the assumptions and the conclusions, so many of them that we can carry about ourselves, that we can carry about other people and about the world. We learn the lessons in meditation again and again of how to disentangle the present moment from so many of the storms of our mind. The storms of anxiety and doubt, the storms of judgment and craving and thought. As we learn the art of what it means to be with ourselves, to be at home in ourselves in meditation practice, we are, I believe, simultaneously learning the art of allowing all things to be in this world, to be seen for what they are, to be visible, to be embraced. Now, this first step in the journey of coming home is not an easy one. To learn to be at peace with all things. Sometimes learning to be at peace in places where there is no peace. Learning what it means to open, to be clear, to be spacious. It is an art and a skill that we learn moment to moment. It is a journey, it is a path, and it does work. We discover that as we calm, that the world that we are part of and that what we bring to it also begins to calm. As we settle within ourselves, we discover that we can indeed see more clearly and deeply. And that there is more and more in our life, both inwardly and outwardly, that is visible to us. In a way, we are learning to let go moment to moment. And that liberates not only us, but it liberates all things, all thoughts, all people, nature, our bodies, to be as they are and to speak with their own truth. Somehow, I think we discover through the calmness of our being that as we are able to perhaps stop telling our story so much to the world, to ourselves, that somehow we're allowing the story of other people, the story of life, the story of our world to be heard, to be visible to us. The first step in homecoming is learning to be at peace with all things, often where there is no peace. But the second, I think, equally important step in this journey of homecoming is to learn what it means to step out of the habit of fleeing, the habit of abandonment that can play such a big part in our lives. I think we see we are always learning and sometimes being challenged to question this habit of flight and to put in its place the custom of befriending. So many moments in our life we see how we are tempted to or inclined to abandon what is, to jump into the next moment, to flee from things that are challenging or difficult or what we call boring or the things that we find unpleasant. How often in our life we are jumping or trying to jump from that, to search for some moment, some way of being that is somehow going to provide the safety or the pleasure or the affection or the certainty that we feel that this moment is somehow lacking, that we feel at times to be very lacking within ourselves. And yet I do feel that it becomes evident to us, and it becomes more and more evident, that each time we cultivate the path of abandonment, we do in a way really make ourselves homeless. We disconnect from what is. We kind of cast ourselves adrift. So we learn in the practice how to be still in the face of that urge to abandon, how to be present, how to listen well, how to stay connected. And I feel that most of us discover in that path, in this path, the understanding that those moments that we are so tempted to flee from are often the moments that offer us the deepest lessons that we can learn in our lives about acceptance and about patience and about compassion and about transforming our own hearts. In the different traditions of practice and teaching, there are many different symbols and stories that are used to represent this journey of homecoming, this journey of returning to ourselves, the journey of returning almost to freedom. This evening I'd like to focus on this series of pictures and poems that in the Zen tradition, as I mentioned, are called the ox herding pictures. They are pictures and poems that almost portray the different seasons of a meditative journey or a spiritual life. They are poems and pictures that describe the journey of endeavoring to discover what is true and authentic. The pictures begin with the portrayal of the search for this elusive ox that roams wild in the forest. And the ox in the pictures is used as a metaphor for liberation, or as a metaphor for Buddha nature, or the essence of life. And in the first of the pictures, you see the herdsman, the herdswoman, the person faced, well actually they're not faced, they have their body pointed in one direction and their face is turned to look behind them. Their feet, their body is looking forward, their head is looking backward. And the commentary of the poem that is used in this first picture, it says, the ox has never really gone astray, so why search for it? Having turned her back on her true nature, she cannot see it. Lost in confusion, he has lost sight of the ox and finds himself confronted by a maze of crisscrossing paths. This first picture in the ox herding pictures is essentially a picture of confusion. The sense, what it emphasizes is a sense of feeling very lost, of feeling very homeless. The season in our journey, the season in our life, where we can be achingly and acutely aware that there feels to be something missing, something incomplete, where we feel uneasy in our life, but we don't even know the source of that unease. We simply don't know. We simply know that we don't feel at home in ourselves or almost anywhere. The maze of crisscrossing paths that is portrayed represents the countless journeys that we make in our lives to fill that sense of incompleteness, or to somehow answer that feeling of unease. We have made many, many journeys through that maze in our lives, searching for wholeness, searching for happiness, searching for love, searching for fulfillment. And we see it in the context of our own lives, how we grow up in a world and in a life seemingly of almost endless promises. So many avenues that seem to promise happiness, fulfillment, identity, safety, intimacy, joy. So many avenues that seem to invite us or tell us who or how we should be in this life. And there are so many prescriptions and so many possibilities of confusion. You know, we should be go for success and wealth and prestige. Or would it be a better pathway in our life to go for humility and self-sacrifice and simplicity? Should we endeavor to become a millionaire, or would it be better to be an ascetic? You know, should we follow the pathway of competitiveness and ambition and striving? Or there is the renunciate model. There's always a cave waiting for us. You know, should our life be dedicated to forging relationships, to marriage, to children, to finding the perfect partner and love? Or should we follow this timeless path of solitude, of aloneness? Should we be a hero or a martyr? Should we dedicate ourselves to serving others? Or would it be better to be taking care of ourselves? There are a lot of possibilities. And even when we enter a kind of spiritual path, when we enter into that world of sort of the exploration of the countless paths and traditions available to us, this can also look like another confusing maze. You know, I've been a convert so many times in my life, I can't tell you. And every time I became a convert to this, you know, I was sure I'd arrived, you know. And then something else would arrive and say, no, no, this is much better. You know, much more promising, much more enlightening. You know, this is a slow path to enlightenment. This is the instant path to enlightenment. You know, this is the gradual path. You know, this is the great vehicle. This is the lesser vehicle. Well, those of us who've been around for a while know that this truly exists. Go into any bookstore. Look at the notice board. Look at the books on the shelves, the promises, the invitations. And it can be confusing, you know. Should we be going to intent on becoming a Buddha? Or would it really be better in our life to be practicing a path of engaged spirituality? You know, should we become a monk or a nun or a spiritual activist? There's the path of devotion, the path of samadhi, the path of service, the path of insight. We don't have enough lives to do all of this. So portrayed in this first picture, I think, is this confusion we can so easily feel in our lives. Where do we go? We have this life. How do we make this life a meaningful life, a free life, an authentic life? But it is not only confusion that is portrayed in this first picture. I think it's sometimes also what comes through is this sense of despair or almost and frustration. Because the frustration, the despair that perhaps is discovered when we begin to sense that the wholeness or the happiness or the freedom or the fulfillment that we've sought for sometimes just hasn't been answered by the endless journeys we've made of wanting and reaching and attainment. Also portrayed in this first picture as the herder stands, body and feet pointed in one direction, the head pointed behind, there's this sense of estrangement. The herder not feeling at home in themselves, not feeling at home anywhere in the world. Now, of course, this is not a series of pictures of bad news. So, in the second picture, something has begun to change. The herder has turned their head to face, to see in front of them. And they begin to see the traces of the ox, the elusive ox. And what is portrayed in this picture is that point where there's a beginning of awakening, a beginning to find a sense of direction, where the herder's feet and head and heart are beginning to come together, beginning to focus, beginning to place their feet on the ground and establish themselves in the present moment. And in doing that, the traces of the ox become visible. And And the commentary says, under the trees by the water, the ox's traces run here and there. Has the herder found the way through the high scented grass? However far the ox may run now, even up the far mountains, it cannot hide itself any longer. It is a point where, in our journey, we begin to find our way. Now that point of waking up in our lives, or beginning to wake up in our lives, I think can come in many, many different disguises. Sometimes disappointment in our life helps us to wake up, helps us to turn towards the reality of life. Sometimes we've loved and then felt rejected or betrayed. Sometimes our heart has been set on some achievement and we may have failed and suffered disappointment, or we may have succeeded and found the success a little bit hollow. Someone we love may die. We have unexpected moments, unexpected encounters, both with joy and with sorrow in our life, that surprise us and often awaken us. Those meetings with joy and sorrow often are moments when we learn just to stand still for a moment and to look at our life, to look at ourselves. There is often an opening to questioning, to investigation, what it is that we most deeply value, what it is that we most deeply long for, what it is that we most deeply would wish to aspire to in our life. Often these moments of joy and sorrow that startle us into wakefulness, they return us to ourselves, and they return us to a beginning of questioning. And out of those moments for many of us, a path or a sense of direction begins to emerge. I think these moments for many of us in our lives can be very profound turning points. So our search begins. We know roughly the direction we want to take. Certainly we'd like a more reliable sense of balance. We'd like to discover a sense of inner happiness and joy. We'd love to know what it means to be more free, to be less bound. We know roughly where we want to go, but the track can still be pretty faint. Sometimes it's a kind of vague knowing. Sometimes it's an intellectual knowing. Sometimes it's intuition. And yet the things that we long for in this season of our journey can still feel to be very separate from where we are. The things that the happiness, the love, the freedom we long for can still feel to be somewhat of a distant and elusive, separate destination, lying in some other time, some other moment, lying on some other horizon. The third picture is called Finding the Ox. And the commentary says, if he or she will listen intently to everyday sounds, she or he will come to realization and in that instant see the source. Now this third picture in the series is a picture that describes yet a different season in the meditative journey or in the journey of awakening. It's a season where we really begin to find in ourselves and in our lives that we're starting to find some ground, to find some root in the present moment. It's the season when our practice begins to yield a few fruits, at least. We might find, oh yes, somewhat surprisingly, there's a little more calmness. we're not so frenzied, we're not so agitated. There might be a little more clarity, a little more understanding. It's a point in our journey that we go through where we start to move from an intellectual understanding or conceptual understanding really to much more direct experience and understanding. It's a point in our journey often where we're moving from doubt and confusion to a deeper sense of faith and confidence, both in ourselves, our practice, our path. It's also that point in our journey where we're actually starting to give up abandonment. We're starting to give up the habit of abandonment. And we're finding the willingness more and more to turn more closely to our lives, even when they're difficult, even when they're hard. We're learning to turn more and more closely to our lives, rather than abandoning them, beginning to see that this truly is the classroom of our awakening. This is the classroom of patience. This is the classroom of forgiveness, of generosity, of compassion. And knowing that those qualities are not going to be found somewhere else. As we begin to find our place in the moment, we begin to find that sense of calmness, clarity emerging. Also, our way of perceiving, our way of understanding, our way of seeing really starts to change. It's like you go out of the door and you stub your toe on a rock. And in the past, you might have said, "Oh, that bloody rock. You know, who put it there? You know, that fool put it in my way. And, you know, life is so unfair." And you might have got so angry and uptight. You might have blamed yourself. "Why am I not more mindful in my life?" You see rock. You see foot. You see hurt. Starts to get a little simpler. We start to lay down the burden of blame and projection. We might experience a wave of greed or rage inwardly, but instead of layering upon it all the extra layers of guilt and remorse and shame, we say, "This is greed. This is anger. This is fear." More and more, we're starting to see things as they actually are. We find ourselves able to rest with a greater sense of ease in the moment, and rather than fleeing from the uncomfortable and the disturbing and the unpleasant, we start to find our sense of balance within them. We begin to realize that the ox is not going to be found in some perfect, flattering moment, but that the ox is going to be found in truth in every moment, every voice, every event, every movement of our mind and world. And so our relationship in that understanding, our relationship to life, our relationship to ourselves and to others begins to change. Because what is happening in that change is that we are moving from a habitual reactivity rooted in our histories to a greater sense of responsiveness rooted in the moment. We learn to listen more deeply to ourselves and the moment as our teacher. And yet sometimes at this point in our journey, clarity still comes in moments and glimpses and still also disappears. And the second part of the commentary that comes with this, it says, "The nightingale warbles on a twig, the sun shines on the willows. There stands the ox. Where could it hide?" The fourth of the pictures is called Catching the ox. And this is a phase in our practice, in our journey. I'm sure many of us are familiar with it. What is shown as a picture is the herder with a noose, a lariat, a rope around the ox's neck, trying to hold on to it desperately, while the ox seems to be wanting to career off in every other direction. And there's that sense of I'm just holding on just by my fingernails. You know, to my practice, to clarity, to sensitivity, to calmness. It all feels very tenuous. And it all seems to take a lot of effort. It all seems to take so much effort. Taking those first steps to coming home is a journey through countless obstacles. How many moments have we had to meet restlessness? Dullness, states of mind, difficult states of mind. How many moments have we had to sit with doubt and uncertainty? And yet still, we begin finally to just feel a little bit more reliability, a little bit more connected, clear, confident in ourselves and in our path. But it's still a place where our clarity and balance can feel a little fragile. We know it and we lose it. And so many people speak about in this practice, you know, where was that serenity I had yesterday? You know, where was that clarity I experienced just a few moments ago? You know, where was that generosity I had just a few moments ago and now I'm so angry? We know it and we continue to lose it. We find ourselves falling from balance, falling from clarity into some of our old and familiar habits of judgment and resistance. So we're trying to hold on to the ox. Sometimes it's difficult. You know, we tell ourselves, this shouldn't be happening. You know, I dealt with dullness. I dealt with doubt. I dealt with that old emotional story. You know, I dealt with that old memory. It shouldn't be happening again. And it is. We're trying to tie ourselves to the ox, and the ox feels a little wild. But what we tend to think at this time is the ox wants to run from us, but part of us also wants to run from the ox. Because we see as we deepen in the practice more and more about all of who we are is revealed to us. And sometimes we shy away from the insights that come. You know, we start to see more and more clearly all things really do change. You know, we're actually not exempt. Doesn't just happen to other people's lives. It happens to us. We begin to see the suffering that comes from grasping. We begin to see somehow the unreliability of hiding in images and conclusions. And on a moment-to-moment level, we start to see more and more clearly the pathways that lead to confusion and suffering and the pathways that lead to peace. Now, on one level, we would think we would welcome this. We would think this is really good news. Until we also begin to see that insight has implications. And the implications of insight are just not always comfortable to us. I mean, what are the implications of impermanence? What are the implications of that insight? Let go? Not something we always greet with great joy. We might see that the implications of some of our insights might suggest that we might have to change our lives. We might be asked to change some of our ways of being in the world. Some people have an allergy to the implications of insight. I remember once, you know, a couple of years ago, standing with my father, who's a kind of chronically enraged person, in a parking lot, and in a supermarket, and he was shouting at the shopping carts. because some fool had left them, as he described them, not me, as he described them, some fool had left them in the parking lot. And as he was, I was watching him shouting at the shopping carts, and I said to him, Dad, you know, there really might be another way of doing this. And he said, what do you mean? He said, I've always done it this way. And I'm always going to do it this way. And I truly understood that if he really saw the suffering of that, really saw it, he would really have to change that way of being. And he didn't know who he was outside of that way of being. He didn't know who he was outside of an enraged person shouting at the world. We see the implications of our insights. We might have to forgive the person we really dislike or resent. We might be asked to let go of some of the things, the patterns that we deeply cherish or avoid. Sometimes, quite frankly, we're quite relieved when the ox goes into hiding. You know, because then we could go and eat that second plate of food without feeling a moment of remorse. Or you know, a sense of misgiving. We could have that juicy bout of resentment or fantasy without that little inner voice saying this might not be a good idea. Sometimes we want the ox to hide. Another part, something that can happen at this part of the journey is, you know, this is another, I would say, danger point. Because this is a place where we've developed a little bit of calm, a little bit more clarity, a little bit more at ease with ourselves. And I've seen so many people at that point give up. They say, oh, I've arrived. That's enough. That's enough effort. You know, I'm an enlightened enough. You know, and now I'm going to retire. You know, now I'm going to retire. I'm enlightened enough. I don't want the rest of it. We have a strong relationship to the ox, but it still feels a little bit tenuous. And there's a way to go. The fifth of the pictures is called Gentling the Ox. And the commentary says, in patient training, the ox got used to the herder and is truly gentle. Should she walk right now into the dust, she no longer gets dirty. Long and patient gentling. Coming or going requires no effort. The ox quietly, gently carries the herder. And this picture shows the herdsman, the herdswoman, walking alongside the ox, sometimes seated on the ox's back. And there's a sense of calmness and confidence that is really shown. It's more effortless. The ox has been befriended. It is a place in our practice often where there's often a great sense of opening, where there's tremendous openings into peace, into joy, into interest in our practice. It is often a really wonderful place in practice. The struggles fall away, and more we find ourselves beginning to fall in love with awareness. We love to be aware. It's a part of our practice where so many of our preferences fall away. All of our ideas of good, bad, high, low, you know, desirable, undesirable, pleasant, unpleasant. The distinctions in a way start to become a little bit meaningless. We understand all things are simply appearing and that awareness really has no preferences. There is no for and against. But there's more of a sense that being at home within ourselves really makes a home. It makes a room for all things, and they can be welcomed. One of the reasons that our preferences are beginning to break down is because the solidity of I, the solidity of self, is also beginning to break down. We're no longer so identified with all the contents of our mind. There's much less the inclination to say, I am, this is who I am, this belongs to me. The sixth picture is called Returning Home on the Ox. And the commentary says, riding free as air, he joyously comes home through evening mist in wide shawl, hat, and cape. Wherever she may go, she creates a fresh breeze, while in her heart, profound tranquility prevails. It is a place where gain and loss really has no meaning, where the herdswoman or herdsman has such unwavering trust in the ox, such unwavering trust in freedom, that they don't need to look elsewhere. In fact, that trust and confidence is so strong that the herder is actually facing backwards on the ox, playing a flute. They're no longer in charge. The ox is carrying her, carrying him. It's like both the fire of wanting and the fear of being nothing has fallen away. And there's begun to be an embodiment in life of all that is true and authentic. It is a season of wise choicelessness, where there's a naturalness both to wisdom and to awareness, where we feel deeply rooted in understanding. And yet still there can be a subtle sense of illusion at play, because the herder is sitting on the back of the ox. There's still a sense of two. And the ox is still seen as being separate from the herdsman or the herdswoman. The seventh picture is titled Ox Forgotten. It says, the herder has come home on the back of the ox. Now the ox is forgotten and he is at ease. Now the herder has returned home. Home is everywhere. When both things and self are wholly forgotten, peace reigns all day long. Only on the ox could the herder find their way home. But now they have found their way home. Home is everywhere. The ox has been absorbed into the heart of the herdswoman or herdsman. The herder has been absorbed into the heart of the ox. And what has disappeared is really any sense of going somewhere or coming from somewhere. And the ox in this, the symbol of freedom and trust in the midst of confusion, has provided a path and a direction. But now home has been reached and the ox is forgotten. And it's a picture that shows that meditation, this resting in freedom, has become the natural activity in which walking, sitting, working, all things take place. That all activities are a celebration of that freedom. There is nowhere to go. The eighth picture is called Both Ox and Self Forgotten. And in this picture, there's no ox and there's no herder. In fact, so this picture, what it is, it's just a circle holding empty space. And the commentary says, space shattered at one blow, and holy and worldly both vanished. In the untreadable, the path has come to an end. The bright moon over the temple and the sound of the wind in the trees. All rivers, returning their waters, flow back again to the sea. It's a symbol of awakening, no longer two, no longer even one. This circle of emptiness, I think, is a powerful symbol in many spiritual traditions. It is a symbol of surrender. Often in the Buddhist tradition, you know, in the early Buddhist paintings and pictures, the Buddha was often portrayed as an empty hut or as footprints in the sand. It is only much later in the Buddhist tradition that Buddhas came into being. It's a picture of surrender, but it is also a symbol of the pervasiveness of awakening. The awakening that runs in and through all things. The freedom that runs in and through all things. The ninth picture is titled, Returning to the Source. It says, return to the origin, back to the source. All is completed. Inside his hermitage, he has no need to look out. Boundless, the river runs as it runs. Red bloom the flowers, just as they bloom. And this picture, again, there's no one there. It shows just mountains and pine trees and clouds and rains. And it's a picture which shows the indivisible nature of both form and emptiness. That emptiness is not a negative state, but it is a manifestation of freedom in which all the uniqueness of all things is born, celebrated, created. That all things appear in that emptiness and are a celebration of that emptiness according to their own rhythm. And that we too appear in that emptiness, part of the ebb and flow, the appearing and passing of phenomena, but abiding in that which is true. That the arising and passing are like the waves on the ocean, but that the waves on the ocean do not describe its depth. The tenth picture is called Entering the Marketplace with Bliss Bestowing Hands. And the commentary says, bare-chested and barefooted, she enters the market, face streaked with dust and head covered with ashes, but a mighty laugh spreads from cheek to cheek, with troubling himself to work miracles. Suddenly, dead trees break into bloom. It is a picture of celebration. Certainly, the awakening does not mean that the herder dies or disappears, but in some way they do. It's a picture which in its depth portrays a natural compassion and engagement with the world, entering the marketplace with bliss bestowing hands. Not trying to make something happen, but bringing into the marketplace that natural fearlessness and wisdom and compassion. And in this picture, the herdswoman, the herdsman, looks so different, they look so unconventional. Fearless, covered with ashes. But everything around them begins to bloom. I think all of these different pictures, they really describe a journey of coming home. They're different seasons that we all meet in our own path. They describe the seasons of shadows, of valleys and peaks. And it's not as if we all pass these different seasons in exactly the same way or at exactly the same pace. And neither are these stories really, they're not definitely an encouragement towards striving and, you know, setting up a new set of inner demands or expectations or comparisons or judgments. But they are an encouragement to reach for what is truly possible for us. What really lies at the heart of all spiritual traditions, to reach for the awakening and the freedom that is possible. I think the enduring theme in all of these pictures is the very fine balance we all need to find in our path, to hold deeply that aspiration to be awake, to be free, to know all that is possible. And yet alongside that, to hold the wise effort that always returns us with great patience and understanding to right where we are. To know that this is where we need to be, where we learn, where we awaken. The wise effort to return us to right where we are, knowing that this is where we learn the lessons of freedom, of befriending, of wisdom, of compassion. And yet at the same time to remember that no matter how hidden or wild or how elusive the ox appears to be in that moment, that our practice and our path is to discover it, and that it may be no further away from us than that one moment we understand what it truly means to open to where we are. We have a couple of moments just quietly together.